I'm speaking with Will Parrish, who sat in a crane to block the development of a highway bypass in Willits, California for 12 days, eh?
11 and a half, to be exact.
11 and a half. I guess the first question I would have to ask you, besides how long, so you were actually in the crane on a perch for 11 and a half days.
Yeah, I had a 2x7 foot piece of plywood that served as my platform, which I just had rested upon two of the bars of the crane that were close together, supporting the platform. So I was about halfway up a 100 foot tall, to my understanding, it's a 100 foot tall derrick that is used to install the wick drains in Little Lake Valley.
Yeah, so we should describe that the crane is actually looks more like an oil derrick in that it's like a box frame that has like a well drilling rig, except right. It's going to shove these wicks, so-called wicks, to drain out the wetlands so that the freeway won't sink right there.
Exactly.
So what did you do to stay exercised? Were you able to actually move around a little bit? Did you get up there and...
During days I had enough strength. What I did was climb up and down the crane. I had a pull-up regiment that I did of doing a pull-up on every bar, which I was fantasizing about how having a little extra strength might help me when they came to try to extract me, which helped motivate me to do that. But about half the time I was actually too weak to move very much. So I spent about half the time just lying huddled up in my sleeping bag on the platform.
Did the police know you were there right away?
Yeah, and actually we had to abort getting some of my supplies up to me during the initial setup of the action because they showed up really early on the morning where we were setting up. So, and there was a police guard on the opposite side of the railroad tracks from the construction area where the wick drain derricks are located right now that we were able to elude because it was such a misty morning. So ironically, the bog fog, so-called, of this wetlands valley obscured the action to help save the wetlands.
Yeah. Why'd you do this?
Well, I've been involved with this campaign since a bit before the Warbler did her tree sit in January, which was the action that galvanized a lot of the on-the-ground resistance to this project. So I've been the first part of the answer is that I've been inspired by everyone else who's taken really bold steps to resist this project, including the Warbler. So I saw an opportunity in my life to take part in this, and I had the right kinds of skills to carry out this actions, and I figured it was the best thing I could do to contribute to this campaign that I've been a part of and putting my heart and soul into for several months, and I figured no one else was going to. So I've just really developed a significant feeling of care for that area through, first, because I originally moved to this area because I fell in love with Little Lake Valley, even though I don't actually live in Willits. I live in Ukiah, the next town south. I came here because I love the landscape of this area, and I love the bogginess and the muck and the mist. And I was involved with giving tours of the so-called bootprint of the bypass route through Little Lake Valley. And over the course of doing about 15 tours where I walked around with people and talked about all these features of the land and the different things that are going to go into destroying those areas of land to create the bypass, I just developed a lot of passion for protecting this place.
Describe the layout of the bypass.
Yeah, it goes around Willits to the east, in a kind of a curvy, snaky form. And in the course of curving around, you know, it goes up to, I'd say, a half mile or so east of town and comes back in. Well, it connects to the existing 101 about a mile and a half south of town and connects back in about a mile and a half north of town or so, north of the high school.
So how did the support team get arranged? Did you have discussions beforehand?
Yeah, there were a handful of people who I work with who were aware that I was going to do what I ended up doing, and a lot of them ended up being supporters, but a lot of it just kind of emerged organically. Once I was up there, I was surprised to see a lot of the people who were out there and how committed they were to being supportive, because quite a few people stayed around the clock camping on the railroad tracks or in an adjacent meadow for the first several days, and some of them don't even live in this area, and they were inspired to do that, partly because I lost my cell phone on the first day, so I had no way of communicating with people other than through the people who are actually out there shouting to me and me shouting back to them.
So were you able to get supplied with food and water for a while?
No, the only food and water I had was what I brought up on the morning of setting up the action. And after that, there was a 24/7 CHP guard at the base of the crane. So I had a little less, I would say, than a day's worth of food going up there. Mm. And I was planning to have more than that, but like I mentioned earlier, the CHP and workers showed up unusually early that morning. So we weren't able to get all my supplies up, and some of the supplies I was missing were food and water. So I had, I think, 4 gallons of water to start out with in less than a day of food, and I was out of food after the third day, or midway into the third day, and I never quite ran out of water, but I did have to ration it quite a bit for several days.
So at a certain point, maybe 7 days into it, people tried to shoot some food up to you on a rope?
Yeah, actually, it was right after I ran out of food on the third day, I shouted down to supporters, "I'm on a hunger strike now, but not a voluntary one." So they got the message and really quickly organized an effort to bring food to me, which didn't quite come off like it was intended. I didn't actually get any food because CHP officers cut the rope that the food had been attached to and kept the food and arrested, I think, 6 people that day.
You were making it clear to those CHP and Caltrans that you were out of food, right?
Yeah, I mean, I actually never had a direct I had a direct conversation only after the effort to resupply me happened that night where 6 people were arrested. But before that, I hadn't talked directly to them. I just shouted to supporters, and they could obviously hear what I was saying about being out of food. And then after that, I engaged with the CHP and tried to ask them, you know, what if I was a loved one up here who had no food and water? You know, would you be allowing me to starve and potentially run out of water? And their response every time was, "You can come down anytime you want."
So at some point after a few days, though, you were allowed to get some food then, correct?
Yeah, the sequence of events was very interesting because there was an almost incredible ninja-style resupply of me that got carried out by a very skilled fellow who climbed up the crane that was positioned about 50 or 60 feet away from mine actually on a day where it had been raining quite a bit. And skipping a lot of the details, he managed to get up there despite the presence of a CHP guard. And we ended up having him send me supplies across a rope that we managed to attach between the two cranes. So that was a great embarrassment for the CHP. And in fact, it's going to probably become an even greater embarrassment for them because they responded in a really heavy-handed way when he got up the crane and had the machine operator come out and turn on the machine and shake it up and down really violently with this man standing on the crane flailing around.
Wow.
Two different times. And that's something that we're pursuing an investigation on.
A life-threatening action.
Yeah, I mean, it could have been he was attached with a safety line to the crane, but he could have easily slipped and had his body smacked against the bars of the crane or something like that. But in any case, the day after he successfully got me quite a good haul of supplies, probably a week's worth, they decided to change their policy. now that there was really no point to enforcing it, they decided that they were going to allow me to have food and water deliveries by one person every night.
And that actually happened for a while?
Right. So there were three of those deliveries before they extracted me.
Okay. And then describe the extraction.
It was on a Monday morning, the Monday before last, as of the time of this interview. There were about 40 CHP officers who were deployed for the action, plus a helicopter, plus a SWAT team of six people. And it kind of happened in slow motion. It was a little surreal because they brought the cherry pickers that they used to send up to have the officers step off of into the crane and take me out about 3 hours before they actually drove them into the area. And they were apparently practicing going up and down in these cherry pickers they just rented right next to Highway 101. So I had lots of advance notice that they were coming. And I decided that my best approach would be to use a metal lockbox called a sleeping dragon and have my arms connected inside of the metal sleeves of that box around one of the bars of the crane, so that they would have to cut me out of the box to get me off of the derrick, which is what happened. I locked around a bar, and it took them, I'd say, about an hour and a half to cut me out in a series of steps. But they're well trained for these kinds of things, and they brought lots of extra blades for their saws and lots of different tools that they used.
Well, it looked pretty hairy, the video I've seen of them cutting it. I mean, you flesh and blood right underneath the metal there, and super sharp saws and sparks and bits of metal flying around. I know they put a blanket on you and gave you one of their beanies and sunglasses and everything, safety glasses, I guess. They looked like sunglasses. You looked really sharp. And so it took them quite a while to cut you loose. Were they jolly while they were doing it? Were they mellow?
I do have to say they were about as friendly as you could expect under the circumstances, which I think had something to do with the fact that they were the same people who did the extractions of tree sitters earlier in this campaign about 3 months before. And they caught some flack for how they handled that whole situation. And apparently they Googled me and found out that I do some journalism, and they brought up that they were worried about what I might write about them. So they actually expressed that they want me to write that they're nice guys. But it was fairly stressful to be cut out of there, especially when metal shards would fly off and onto my arms, which were unprotected, and that was painful.
So you were up there for 11 and a half days. Now, during that time period, we had some real extremes of weather. I mean, it rained like 3 inches up where I live. And it also got really hot.
Right.
So, I mean, it was amazing that, you were physically enduring just being there. And then, fortunately, you had some food. You had actually done a tree sit earlier. Do you want to say that?
Sure. Yeah.
And were you extracted from that?
No, actually, the tree sit that I was a part of is still going. It's our longest running tree sit we've had now. As of a few days ago, it surpassed the length of the Warblers tree sit. And six different people have sat in that tree, so we're taking shifts, and I did one of the shifts.
Okay, so nobody's been extracted from that one?
Nobody's been extracted. There were CHP officers that patrolled the area under the tree sit during my extraction from the crane. So they're well aware that the tree sit's there, but they haven't moved on it yet.
Okay, now compare and contrast tree sitting and crane sitting.
Well, trees are much better places to enjoy solitude and much more pleasant to sit in. One thing I thought was interesting was that all the creatures I encountered in the tree, like the little worms and little flying creatures and birds, were much softer and hairier and seemingly friendlier than the ones in the crane. You know, there were moths that would visit me in the crane that had scales on them. You know, I'm not so good at identifying that class of animals, but you know, there were animals that were obviously adapted to a much harsher situation in the area where they've, you know, completely decimated and cleared all the vegetation from. Other than that, I mean, physically and mechanically, it's different. Just in that this crane has bars going straight up and down and across in a grid, so it's much easier to climb, obviously. And at least, you know, once you're up there, I mean, it was actually much more difficult to get to the actual derrick part of the machinery because it's attached to a tall caterpillar, which was hard to get up above that level.
So what are you being charged with? Tomorrow you're going to get arraigned. What charges are they bringing against you?
They're charging with 3 counts of trespassing, which they're filing as infractions, which usually would be a misdemeanor, to my understanding. But it seems like their strategy is to make so I don't get a jury trial. So by filing as an infraction, they can just have a judge preside over my trial, not a jury. Because a jury is more likely to drop the charges, mm-hmm. Or find me not guilty than judges, because judges will just kind of process it like it's traffic court and process me through as quickly as possible. So we're going to try to have them refile the charges as a misdemeanor and assert my right to a jury trial.
Okay, so an infraction is like a ticket.
It's like getting a parking ticket, basically. Parking ticket, okay. Except in this case, they want to stick me with a 12-month stay-away order. So I'm not. If I go to the bypass route for the next year, they would automatically arrest me.
Hmm. Have they done that to anybody else that they've taken out of a tree?
They did apply the same kind of thing to the fellow who goes by Rain, who was the tree sitter, who everyone made a big fuss about throwing poop. And got a 60-day jail sentence, and who got shot, by the way, with beanbag pellets.
Yeah, and it's weird because beanbag pellets are not like little beanbags that you're tossing into a happy clown. They like really hurt.
Yeah.
They do that because they know that the plastic and rubber bullets will break bones and stuff. And this hurts in the same way, but doesn't actually break bones.
It's a propaganda term.
Absolutely. Where did your strength come from?
Mainly drew strength from seeing people out there supporting me and being passionate about what I was doing, because during times where I felt isolated, the thoughts and doubts crept in pretty readily. Mm-hmm. And I started having fantasies about hot meals and, comforting things that I was craving, that, that are conveniences from everyday life that I was being deprived of. But when people would come out like with a bullhorn on the railroad tracks and shout encouraging things and send their love and that sort of thing, I got lots of strength. I just knew I had to stick it out. And I had faith the whole time that at some point they would find a way to get me supplies. And in fact, it was sort of a dramatic juxtaposition of things happening, because one of the leading police officials in this region came out to try to talk me down from the crane on the Wednesday, that was the same day I got resupplied. And I had just gone through 2.5 days of being drenched from the rain, because I just was not expecting the unseasonal rain to happen, and brought a pretty flimsy tarp. So I ended up being totally drenched and miserable and shivering cold for 2.5 days. And right at the tail end of it being so wet and rainy, this police official comes out, offers to have me cited and released so I wouldn't have to spend jail time, says he'll buy me a hot meal on the way down to the county jail, and put my mom on the phone. And apparently they'd figured out how to get a hold of my mom. Mm-hmm. And the plan was to try to use my mom's concern for me to help convince me to come down. And right as I was having this conversation with this police official, the sun poked out for the first time in 2.5 days. And I was like, okay, I can stick this out. I'm staying here. And it was like 2 hours later that the resupply happened.
Good. So what kind of music went through your head when you were sitting up there?
The song that's been stuck in my head the most for the past 5 months or so is the theme song to Les Miserables, because I saw that in the theater about 2 days before the Warblers tree set. So that's felt like my theme song for the resistance to the bypass. And I actually noticed that when I did certain types of chants and noises, when I was really, really cold and just having trouble and enduring the shivers and the pain, frankly, of being drenched and it being really cold, that I could warm up my body. So I had this really interesting experience of figuring out how to use my ability to sing to warm myself up. So
did you just sing the theme song from
I did sometimes.
No Jefferson Airplane or
No Jefferson Airplane, but I did finally get a radio during the resupply too.
Oh.
So listen to lots of KZYX.
Good. K-Mud.
K-Mud, I would have listened to, but for some reason wasn't picking it up.
Oh, it's at that end of the valley, yeah. Okay, now, name three amazing visual things that happened while you were up there.
There was the brightest full moon of the year when I was up there, which I was completely enamored with, because things like that become much more, you know, just the ability to appreciate those things gets intensified, I think, during, you know, when you're so exposed to the elements like I was. So that was amazing, just watch the moon. And I was having trouble sleeping anyway because they had floodlights on my platform every night.
The CHP did that?
They did. And so I just sat up and watched the moon all night that night. I also had some interesting dreams. One of them was about salmon. And the next morning, that was the first night that I got a police-approved supply of food and water. I had that dream, and I hadn't realized that some of this food that came up was actually salmon, that some people who were coming back from a native people's salmon gathering ceremony in Yurok territory in Northern California had brought and dropped in my supply bag. So I woke up the morning after having this really vivid dream about salmon fishing, and there were salmon in my bag. And the last thing I ate before the extraction was that salmon, because I just had this feeling like they are not getting their filthy hands on this salmon. Seeing the fellow who resupplied me coming up the other crane was a highlight of my life.
Well, since you didn't have a phone, you didn't know that that was going to happen, eh?
I had no idea. I was.
Well, that must have been amazing.
yeah. I've never known euphoria quite like that.
Did you write stuff while you were up there?
Unfortunately, my pen and notebook I'd planned to bring up there also didn't make it up there initially. But I did write a little bit after the first police-approved resupply, because I managed to get a notebook and pen out of the deal. But they took those things, and they have them at the CHP office
evidence.
In Ukiah as evidence now.
Right. How old are you?
31.
And did you go to UC Santa Cruz?
I did.
Did you in the environmental studies program?
I did sociology and a minor in journalism.
Okay. And you're currently a journalist for the AVA?
Right.
And do you work with other news sources also?
Not at the moment, but I've done some freelance work.
So, well, you probably don't want to show all the cards in your hand, but I imagine you'll still stay involved in this whole thing, no matter what kind of restrictions they try and stick on you. And everybody in the community is really proud of, you know, that you were willing to stick it out like that. And what did it feel like to be not in touch with the earth for 11 and a half days? I haven't actually ever done that.
That's a great question. Well, it was all pretty surreal. I mean, I went through a lot of physical extremes during the whole experience. So, I mean, really the tree sit was more comfortable and more Yeah, I have a better ability to reflect on that question when it comes to the tree sit, because it just creates an altered state of consciousness. It's not like you're high exactly, but it definitely puts you into a different frame of mind that lends itself more to, I don't know, just like a poetic state of mind, I guess. For example, a lot of tree sitters just meditate for, you know, hours at a time every day, because all that you have to mediate your experience from is just this tree, and, you know, the feeling of being supported by the tree is really, really comes into play. And
how long were you in jail after that?
A little more than two days.
Were they nice to you there?
I mean, within reason.
Well, that's an open answer, but okay, so I guess we'll hear more about your situation after tomorrow when you're arraigned in Ukiah. I totally appreciate you coming in and talking, and Will Parrish, you can check out his blog on the AVA blog, Anderson Valley Advertiser. Mm-hmm. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much for having me.
I'm Dan Roberts for KMUD Radio.